The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It is Wednesday, December 1st, or maybe November 3rd. I don't know how many days November has. Either way, it's a Wednesday. That means it's a pretty great football show. Pew, 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 pew. Is it December or November?
It's December 1st, yeah.
Nice. It's welcome to December. We made it.
Yeah.
Christmas time. How do you rate December amongst your favorite holidays or favorite months?
Well, first off, I think it's the greatest holiday time of the year, season of the year. I don't really view Thanksgiving as a holiday.
Yeah.
I don't know that we talked about it much last week, but I just feel like when your holidays basically comprised of a meal and that meal is not highlighted by the entree, like that's a problem. Mm. And that's essentially what Thanksgiving is. Like, I don't know many people who I go, hey, what are you excited about for Thanksgiving? They're like, oh, the turkey. No doubt, man.
Oh, yeah.
Usually it's like a side.
Uncle Phil's dessert. Dry turkey that he drops out every Thanksgiving. I can't wait.
Well, and again, maybe that's it. It's just hard to cook a turkey the proper way where it's delicious. So I'm not trying to like rag on turkey right now. I love me a good turkey sandwich or even a nice little slice of a breast there. But I'm just saying, like that entire meal, people get more excited about the sides and dessert than they do the entree.
Do you think that there's a chance? I mean, we don't need to derail the podcast talking about this, but you know, a lot of holidays are basically built around corporations trying to make money. Like, do you think, I would guess that Big Turkey has made a substantial lobbying push over the last 200 years to ensure that we remember that when, you know, the pilgrims landed, they were just like, man, we got to find some turkey. Like, that's what we like. We love turkey.
They're just a bunch of turkeys running around everywhere. You know, that's all we saw. We're like, well, we'll eat that because there's a lot of that.
I mean, I guess, hey, look, there's a bird with a weird red thing dangling from its neck. Let's shoot it and see if it's any good. And I guess it turned out it was fine.
Yeah, here's the other thing about them. You know, those things, they just procreate, all right? You may not know the history of turkeys. Those things like to get it on. And that's one of the other things is they just kept reproducing and reproducing and reproducing. So at one point, I think it was more of like population control. Mm. So the world can get taken over by wild turkeys. But nonetheless, I'm shocked that 2021, we haven't gotten like a turkey substitute that's taken over at least a fraction of that market. I just think most people are like, oh, I just eat the sides. I don't, you know, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat turkey or whatever else. I think I'm surprised that we haven't gotten to that point yet, right? We're like, we don't have an impossible turkey. We've got an impossible burger. Mm. We don't have an impossible turkey yet. It still looks like a turkey, like still the shape of a turkey. But no, it was created in a lab somewhere with all sorts of other things that aren't necessarily directly from the earth, or they've been, you know, processed or mutated at some point.
Let's not act like the entire turkey production process is all natural. I mean, you know, you got a lot of...
Well, first off, I mean... It's kind of like our athletes, like they juice those things to the gills.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
have you ever seen a real turkey running in the wild? They are not big and fat. They're like,
yeah, you want a big, fat, muscular turkey that you're going to be cutting into and eating on Thanksgiving. All right. It's no different than how you like your linebackers. Do you want some skinny, feeble linebacker, Or do you want this guy to have no neck and he's just up there rocking dudes up? I mean, that's essentially what we want. You know, we want those guys juicing so they look the part, right? Like when they walk by, you go, hey, that guy probably played linebacker. I don't think he has a neck. It just goes.
That turkey probably played linebacker.
This is what he looks like. He's walking around like this the whole time. That's because his neck got compressed from hitting people all the time, and now he's got no neck. You know,
the Takeo Spikes look. Yeah,
that, you said that, not me. So Takeo, if you're listening,
no.
Make sure
Takeo.
To just absolutely unload on Will Brinson, and don't use the new form of tackling, by the way, where your head's out of it and shoulder. I want you to like eyeballs through the middle of him and head up and absolutely just bury him. All right, like we were taught when we were young. Face mask right through his soul. All right.
He did a show on CBS with, and I think I was the host maybe, several years back down in Fort Lauderdale. Incredibly nice guy. But what stands out is like when you get close to him, first of all, he looks like if I said the wrong thing, this guy could just like literally rip my body in half.
Well, yeah, that's most people though. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, Pete claims he could do that to you, even though Pete would need a step stool in order to do it. So
I know. Like I'm just going to like lightly jog around the room while Pete flails trying to catch me. He's just, you know, yeah. push him over and watch him like flop around a little bit on his back.
Boy, I tell you what. Yeah. He almost looks like a Thanksgiving turkey at this point in time.
Do you know, Pete called Urban Meyer the figurehead in Jacksonville. He called him the figurehead coach and then bragged that it was catching on around town. Do you believe that Pete is coming up with a catchy phrase?
I think Pete's still upset that he spent so much time in Jacksonville. He can't get a one-on-one. That's what I think.
Oh, ho, ho! Very possible.
I'm sorry. Like when you end up being a troll your entire career, it's hard to get one-on-one interviews with head coaches. I'm just saying.
Oh, oh! speaking of Urban Meyer, we talked about this a little bit on Monday, but like, there's this idea that Cliff Kingsbury or Urban Meyer, and Cliff has come out and, you know, done the thing where
he denied it.
Didn't deny it. He did or didn't?
Did not.
He did not deny it. Yes, correct. Now, I said, and I'm curious, you probably agree, Cliff is just trying to angle for an extension and a raise instead of actually leaving for a college job. Urban Meyer came out and it was reported by ESPN that Urban is not interested in leaving Jacksonville for a job. And then we have Matt Rhule.
Just pause there. Okay. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
The reason why I think Urban Meyer is coming out and adamantly saying he's not interested in it is this organization's had his back, right? Early struggles, other things going on, yep. And they've supported him every step of the way. So you're going to be a lot more loyal to them considering the fact that they have continually had your back through what was kind of a tumultuous period at the beginning of the season. So that makes complete sense from that standpoint. I'm not going to say he owes them one, but I think the way they've handled things with him and they have been supportive with him despite the struggles and throughout the rest of the season, you know, I think he realizes that there's no reason to start looking for that next best job if that was the case.
So now, Urban
Cliff Kingsbury, that's a different story.
Nope.
These coaches are getting paid so much that I honestly, like, I don't know. I don't know if he is just doing it for a contract extension or if at some point he's like, I mean, Brian Kelly's getting paid $9.5 million per year. You know, Lincoln Riley's getting, what, 12? Mel Tucker's getting 9.5. I mean, there's a lot of coaches who are making bank on long-term deals. I mean, you're talking nine figures or almost nine figures. No one commits to NFL coaches like that besides Mark Davis to John Gruden. And maybe he was the genesis of when this all started. Mm. But at least in the college realm, you can kind of blame the job Mel Tucker's done at Michigan State. Because when he got that 10-year, $95 million deal, every other coach was like, wait a second, it's his first winning season. Why am I not getting that? And so as soon as those big jobs start flying open, everyone's using it as leverage. Everyone's either extending and getting a similar deal, or they're going to greener pastures. And so I'm sure NFL coaches are listening to their agents, and their agents are like, hey, dude, I don't know if it's realistic if you want to go back to college or not, but the reality is the way these programs are built, especially when you're talking about like Oklahoma or Alabama or Ohio State, like the infrastructure within is that of which an NFL organization, you're a figurehead. You're overseeing the coaching staff. You're overseeing your analysts, your recruiting staff, department and all that. it's kind of similar to an NFL organization now. Like, the lines are very blurred. So I'm never going to say never, but I do think it has more to do with an extension than anything else.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if I were picking one coach who is an NFL head coach to go back to college or to go to college, like, I don't think there's any way in, you know, Mike Tomlin came out strong and said what he said. I don't think there's any way there's always rumors that like John Gruden was going to go coach Tennessee, right? That was like the annual rumor. I can't imagine.
Or Notre Dame. His name was thrown in there for that. Now, sure. Obviously his name's not being thrown in for anything right now.
No. Well, that's because of his story that he wrote about in Playboy about Notre Dame. You know, with that, right? I'm assuming you do.
It's irrelevant at this point. We should probably just move on from John.
Probably move on. Yeah. Anywho, Kingsbury is the one guy where just because he was in college, he just has like a college look to him. Like, I don't think any coach who's been a lifetime NFL head coach is going to jump to college, right? That just, there's too much of a difference between the jobs that you have to do.
Yeah. And I think you're also, depending on where you're at, you kind of have to deal with the bureaucracy, right? Like, if you go to Oklahoma, one of the hangups there is, and I think this is for a college coach looking at or NFL coach if they're looking at it, is Joe Castiglione, their athletic director. This is probably his last hire. He's not going to be there that much longer. So do you really want to go get hired by a guy who's not going to be there for the majority of your tenure there? Like, that's an issue, because an athletic director isn't like a general manager. I mean, I would actually make the case head coach in college football have more autonomy than a head coach does in the NFL over an organization. Sure. But there is some holes and things you have to jump through that are a little more difficult or make your life more difficult that you don't have to in the NFL. So there's your pluses and minuses. But if the money's all equal, I mean, it's a shorter season. I mean, if we're really being real about ourselves, like, the media intensity is not quite as bad. I mean, these guys are getting, you know, all these use of private jets and everything. I mean, the perks are starting to kind of create a wash where, like, the lines are blurred. I mean, if we're being real with ourselves, I don't care if an NFL head coach has never had experience being a college head coach, because the majority of the tweets and the texts and everything else that's happening in recruiting aren't by him. It may be from his account, but he only comes in as the closer nowadays. So it's an entirely different world in college football. And I do think it's getting closer to professional football. And I do think it's getting closer to the point where, like, Bill O'Brien, I mean, he was a head coach who was pretty successful with the Houston Texans, winning their divisions and going to the playoffs. And, you know, he's sitting there as an OC at Alabama. I mean, I'm sure he wants to get back as a head coach in the NFL, but, you know, maybe he'd be willing to take one of those openings. I mean, he's a guy who's had success, relatively speaking, at Penn State.
Saved Penn State.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know.
Probably overblown, but sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think James Franklin's probably been more of the constant there, but
Bill O'Brien took over Penn State when they were in a really bad position. And
right, but then he also kind of left them pretty quickly high and dry. Like, I don't know that they were through that bad time. You know, it was like,
fair enough.
All right, we sailed across, you know, the stormy sea. We're halfway there. And he's like, yeah, I got picked up on a motorboat. I'm out of here. I'm going to Houston. And you're like, we still have halfway to go. Okay. That's going to be tough.
Yep. So you don't see, is there any chance Matt Rhule bounces back to college? I mean, things are not going particularly well in Carolina.
You know, I'll never say never with David Tepper, because I think he's a guy who reacts relatively, you know, quick and can kind of make those changes because he comes from a different background. You know, I think people who have patience that are NFL owners, is they've owned the team, that's their deal, or they've done it for a long time, right?
Yep.
But I think these newer owners tend to be like, no, that's not how we do it in the business world, right? Like, what's his background, right? Was he finance, right? So they tend to kind of move quicker and fast in how they go about navigating that space. I think they apply that then to sports too, to try to find that right model to have immediate success. Now, I mean, I think you get Deshaun Watson in there, your team's probably playing a lot differently right now. I mean, I don't know that Christian McCaffrey is going to be there after this year. It seems like, you know, he's had a hard time staying healthy, and I would too. You know, I'd be staying at home too a lot if Olivia Culpo was my girlfriend, which, by the way, sure. Count up how many games he's missed since he started dating Olivia Culpo, dating back to 2019.
My ankle's hurt again.
I'm just saying, bro, like, it's a weird correlation, and it's not a bad way to go home to, or not a bad thing to go home to.
That is a weird correlation. They probably
22 games, I think.
Yeah.
In the past 2 years.
I'm just looking at the contract.
In the summer of 2019.
I think it's probably, he's on the team for at least one more year.
I don't think so. I think they use them as trade bait.
Oh, they can trade anything, sure. But I mean,
because what's the point of, for an ankle injury that he has, it's not that serious. He probably could come back. But what's the point of like sitting him out the rest of the season if you're not trying to protect him and ensure that he's healthy enough to then trade and pass a physical come next offseason?
A trade before June 1st would actually create a negative hit on your cap, for what it's worth.
It doesn't matter. Teams can buy that and the swap for draft picks and all that all the time. Okay, like, we've talked about that in the past, like it's an issue, but now more and more, that doesn't stand in the way of teams doing deals.
If it is, increasingly likely that if he does play for the Panthers in 2022, that will be his last year, though, given the way the contract's structured. So, I was going to ask you just really quickly. I know this is an NFL show, but I am curious what you thought about Brian Kelly to LSU and Lincoln Riley to USC, because I mean, those are massive moves. Like, and both those guys have been at various points over the past, you know, 5 or 10 years. Listed as possible NFL head coaching candidates almost every single season. Now they appear to be pretty locked into their new respective destinations. I mean, do you think if you had to rank those two landing spots, USC, LSU, where do they fall into your top job options? And as a Notre Dame guy yourself,
yeah,
are you heartbroken?
I think USC is probably the easier place to win right away.
Yep.
Look, both Baton Rouge or Louisiana and Southern California have a ton of talent. But the difference is you're in the SEC West and you've got to go up against, at least for the foreseeable future, Nick Saban in Alabama
every single
at
year.
Least once a season. Yeah. So
and
that's a problem.
You can't get to the championship game, which unless, means you can't get to the playoffs right. without beating Nick Saban, more than likely, unless you have one. You know, I mean, we've seen, of course, teams with one right. loss pull right. it off. And then even if you get to the championship game, you probably got Kirby Smart in Georgia staring you down on the other side.
Right. So you asked me a question at one point. I kind of forget what it was. But
Are you heartbroken as a Notre Dame alum?
No, not at all. I mean, look, the reality is at some point they're going to have to move on from Brian Kelly. He chose to move on from them. Now, you know, you can chalk up all sorts of reasons as, oh, he didn't think he could win a national championship at Notre Dame, whatever the case is. I mean, the funny thing about that is he went to one of the BCS era. He's been to two college football playoffs the last 3 years. And they might find their way, depending on what happens this weekend, into one. And so, like, that narrative that's out there.
He's not coaching, right, if they get in?
No. And so the narrative that's out there, I'm like, so you're telling me he left to go to a situation where the cupboard's bare, they have culture issues, they have O-line depth issues, but he left to go down to LSU because they threw a bunch of money at him. But you're telling me he has a better chance of winning a national championship there when his team might literally be playing for one this year? It's like the whole thing's just kind of odd, like as far as what the reasoning was behind the move. The reality is, much like anything else, it's a people person business. There's a falling out between Brian Kelly and the athletic director, Jack Swerber. And time and time again, you know, Trace Armstrong, who's Brian Kelly's agent, has come to Jack Swerber asking for another deal, asking for more things. And most of those things were done, but some things take a little longer to get done at Notre Dame. And for those things that weren't done yet, I think there's just a fair amount of frustration. And for a guy who was the all-time winningest coach at Notre Dame, has won 10-plus games in the last 5 seasons, I think he felt like he deserved more respect, in part for what his requests are and to get over that hump to win a national championship, but also, you know, just with teams being interested in him. I mean, USC has come at him a couple times. They tried before they hired Lincoln Riley. You know, then LSU comes along after they miss with Lincoln Riley and they miss with Brian Kelly and they just throw a bunch of money at him. And he's like, hey, man, you want to match this? I mean, and there's just no response. And so
– wait, so you're saying that – so LSU approached Brian Kelly once and he thought about it and turned him down, right?
No.
Okay.
That was USC. USC had approached Brian Kelly in previous years and they had put out some feelers and done some their due diligence before even like the whole Matt Campbell conversations first started, which Pete Thamel reported on. He was accurate. You know, Matt Campbell turned that deal down. And then they pivoted and they went to Lincoln Riley,
wow,
who ultimately ended up being their guy. That's how it all worked out.
Okay. So,
once LSU couldn't sign Lincoln Riley.
Gotcha.
And once they let that go, and it became public that they were trying to go for him, right? And part of that, you know, it's funny because the agents are the ones behind all this. right? Trace Armstrong happens to represent Lincoln Riley as well. You know, part of the reason why you make it public that LSU is so hot and bothered about your candidate for that job is because you want that school that he's at to know this is what you need to do to help keep him, right? You need to bring your offer up or exceed it, and you've got to supply what they're supplying, whether that's additional staff and analysts, whether that's new facilities or upgrades or whatever the case may be. It's all those things, and especially to prepare OU for going into the SEC where all those other schools have it. They have less sports. They have more revenue to generate or devote towards their football program. So that ends up being, you know, part of the negotiation tactic by the agent. And the hard part is then it hangs out the school to dry if it doesn't work out or you don't get the guy, right? If he either signs back or if he decides to go somewhere else. And so LSU now feels like they've got pie on their face and they pivot and they're like, who do we really like? Who's our guy? Who can we throw a bunch of money at? And Brian Kelly, who they had heard rumors because Trace Armstrong, who represents Brian Kelly, who represents Lincoln Riley, knew that Brian was kind of intrigued by USC, but didn't want to take that job, didn't want to go, knew that maybe his ear was open to offers. So once LSU then came forth with a big offer, there really wasn't quite as much of a compelling case for, you know, Jack Swerbrick and Brian Kelly to work this thing out. And Brian essentially just came to him resigning.
I like hearing the back end of it. And that's the Trace Armstrong thing is really interesting too, because you know, you have this happens at the NFL and college level. Like this is not by accident that these guys are maneuvered into these positions by, you know, basically like three or four really powerful coaching agents. Any other thoughts on the coaching carousel?
Yeah, no, I just think it's you see all this.
All right, who does Notre Dame hire?
I mean, at this point, there's probably too many candidates to know. I mean, I think you look at your Luke Fickles, your Matt Campbells, they would look like natural fits there. Outside of that, I mean, you could say Marcus Freeman is already on their staff.
Yep.
But, you know, does he feel ready for that moment? Does he want to take that opportunity? I mean, if it ends up Luke Fickle coming there, he's going to be a shoo-in for the Cincinnati head coaching job. So, you know, the tough thing I think for their defense coordinator, Marcus Freeman, is as of right now, if he acts quick and joins Brian Kelly's staff and leaves Notre Dame, it then prohibits him potentially from then being the head coach of Cincinnati. Like He doesn't know if that's out there for him yet. And you got to uproot your family to potentially uproot your family again, or maybe not. So that's an interesting part of all that. But you know, he's another guy I think they'll end up looking at. Jeff Brohm's another guy.
Will he be the interim coach for the rest of the season?
I don't know that they're going to name one. Oh. I think they feel very good with the structure that's currently there. And you're talking about potentially one game, unless they go to the playoff, where maybe they reevaluate and feel like, all right, let's go ahead and name an interim and let's move forward. But
I think a lot has to happen for them to get to the playoff, right? Like,
I mean, you can make the case depending on the rankings, you know, which this would have. This is airing tomorrow.
It'll air on Wednesday. Yeah. So we won't. Yeah.
So the reality is this. This is what they need to happen. They obviously need Georgia to beat Alabama to knock Alabama out. They also, you know, I don't know that they need much more than Iowa to beat Michigan. And then I think they might slide up and in to that spot. And look, yeah, you still have Georgia. You still have Cincinnati, who I'm assuming beats Houston, even though it's going to be a tough game. And Iowa's not leaping all the way up. And even if you had Oklahoma State beat Baylor, which I assume is going to happen, Notre Dame would be that fourth team. So you really have a case where
at all.
No, it's not far-fetched, especially where the Big Ten has been this year. It's really not that far-fetched. And the way Alabama's played things so close of late, I think there's a chance that could play out. So that's what makes this whole situation, the timing odd. But the timing of this is more due to the fact that LSU's got an opening. The early signing period, which has become basically the signing period now, is next week. And or at least coming up here shortly. And because of that, there's this mad scramble and rush to make sure they have a head coach there, then pitch to recruits. So that's why you see everything sped up. And that's why it becomes a really unfortunate timing for everything involved. But
right.
But well, again, the reality
is with Lincoln Riley bouncing so quick
that's part of it. He's got to recruit. He's got to rebuild recruit. Then they especially could use it. And by the way, to answer your initial question, Southern Cal would be the job that's easier to turn around.
Yep.
You don't have really any competition in the Pac-12 outside of maybe Oregon, who's not even your division. And then on top of that, if Mario Cristobal leaves, where does that leave them? there's a chance he could end up signing in Miami if that job comes open, as they're still trying to find, you know, their next athletic director. So I think it's an easier turnaround for Brian Kelly. Look, everyone talks about, the last three head coaches at LSU have won a national championship. That's great. And he's a better coach than the last two. Now, I would say he's not Nick Saban, but if you look at his track record, he's been just about as successful as Nick Saban as far as Grand Valley, Cincinnati, Notre Dame, stacking together wins. So he's got the resume. It just comes down to, does a guy from Boston, does he fit Baton Rouge, Louisiana, especially if things don't go well early? And he doesn't have to worry about the academic standards that you have in Notre Dame, but you also have to worry about some of the other, you know, protocols they have at LSU. Whereas, you know, if guys get popped for smoking weed, for example, it only takes two times and they're kicked out. They're booted off the team. So there's other
issues. In Notre Dame, people don't smoke weed, so you got that going for you.
Well, you get drug tested, and you get hair drug tests, urine tests. It's a lot of things. And no, they get kicked out too, but the kid who's coming to Notre Dame is probably not doing that as much as other places, right? Like, yeah. And that's why I don't think you'll see a mass exodus from Notre Dame like you've seen from Oklahoma, where you've got all these decommits. For Notre Dame, like, the parents and players who choose to go there, they're choosing to go to the university more so than they're choosing to go for that head coach.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll find out what question about Brady Quinn Ryan Wilson was shocked, or what fact about Brady Quinn Ryan Wilson was somehow shocked to find out next.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect
for real. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
So we were talking about this job. I was in Slack or like after the thing. And I was like, of course, Wilson pointed out, you know, LSU, you get a bigger recruiting base, I mean, of course, than Notre Dame. Of course, true. I was like, but you have a monopoly on the Catholics at Notre Dame. And he goes, is Brady Catholic? I was like, yeah, you are Catholic, right?
Yeah, but the funny thing about that is you know, we had one of my best friends, left tackle for my entire career, that Ryan Harris, he's Muslim. You know, we had a couple players. My backup quarterback, my senior year, was Jehovah's Witness. So, yeah, I mean, it's all over the spectrum. It's not like you just have to be Catholic to be recruited.
He's not required to be Catholic to be there, but like,
not at all.
If you're a really good Catholic athlete, like a really good Catholic football player,
they've got the end to it because they understand that the structure of what they've been going to in school, they can handle the rigorous academic schedule. And their parents who sent them there, however they got there, probably want to keep them on that path, right? I mean, I know we feel like education doesn't matter anymore for a lot of these college athletes, but it does for the kids who choose to go to Notre Dame. And that's why they go there.
Because not that I'm not Catholic, but my son is currently at a Catholic school.
There you go. So you don't have to be. It's a good school to listen, right?
Yeah. I guess he's Methodist. I don't know what he is. Either Presbyterian or Methodist. Like maybe he's Catholic. Hell, I don't know. Anyway,
it's sad you don't know what your son is.
Well, I guess he's Methodist because he was baptized in the Methodist Church.
Yeah, that would make him.
That would pretty clearly make him Methodist.
Yeah, that would make him Methodist. Yeah.
But I grew up Presbyterian. I don't really see. There's not a huge. This does not need to become the religion podcast. we cover everything here. All right, very quickly, let's run through the updated playoff picture because it is fascinating after Monday Night Football to see.
By the way, can I go off on a tangent? That onside kick rule is the dumbest rule ever. Like, it's meant for player safety. I get it. The guy was on the backside of where the ball was kicked. It had no impact on the play. It'd be like an outside zone point to the right, and then your backside tight end, who's just trying to cut off the backside end, holds, and they throw a flag, and the ball's all going to the sideline. It has no impact on the play whatsoever. If the running back cuts it back, I get that. But I just sit there and I go, this is so stupid. Like, this play is usually so insignificant and hard to convert, and yet – We're gonna like basically throw a flag in a guy for a legal formation because he's off a yard and he had no impact on the play.
Yeah,
it was so stupid and it could have ruined what could have been a magical ending.
So yeah, it could have been incredible. You're right.
You guys don't go off on tangents like that on the earlier shows. I listen to them. You guys don't do that.
What do you mean?
You guys don't get mad about like an onside kick rule for a legal formation.
You get insanely mad on like Sunday night about them. We go nuts.
No, maybe Sunday night, not Monday night. Hey. Not Monday night.
No, not Monday night.
Or Tuesday.
I think I was just glad I didn't lose my Washington bet. I did kind of want them to get the ball. I needed one catch from Tyler Lockett to win my fantasy matchup, and it just didn't happen.
By the way, was it shocking Metcalf only had one catch with like a minute left in the game?
Yeah, real shocking.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. So really quickly on the Seahawks before we get into it, because Seattle is now probably toast. They're 3-8. Washington is in the playoffs as of today. San Francisco 6-5. Washington the 7th seed at 5-6. I feel like you deserve more credit. I might even write a story about this and take the quotes that you had from the previous podcast about Russell Wilson, because the things that you said were going to happen with him are very clearly happening. Like, he is not comfortable with the football in his hands right now. It looks like he looks like somebody who suddenly has like lost the, like we were saying, if you like burnt my fingertips off, I would have a really difficult time typing. Like, he looks like somebody who he doesn't want to run because he doesn't trust his grip on the ball. He's holding the ball too long. He's taking bad sacks. He doesn't trust where the ball is going when he throws it. It very clearly looks like it's flying off his fingers funky at the end. Like, what you said appears is happening with the Seahawks, right?
Yeah, and there's, it's funny. Someone asked me, they're like, well, can he just numb up his finger? And you're like, yeah, but it's not about pain. This is about the fact that you just don't have feeling anymore in your fingertip. And your finger's not going to be as strong or not going to move the same way it did before. And so you kind of have to adapt and adjust the new normal. Now, this literally happened the second game starting in my career in the NFL. And I'm not saying this, hey, this is why it didn't work out for me or anything like that, but it never felt the same after that. After getting the pins put in, pulling them back out, I always remember throwing the football and being like, it never felt the same. Like,
even in Denver, like, Kansas City?
No, I mean, no matter where I was, like, it didn't matter the rest of my time in Cleveland, my third year in Cleveland, Denver, Canada, whatever. It never felt the same. I had to adapt to a new normal and how it felt. And sometimes it felt kind of funky coming off your finger, because you didn't have the same sensations. But that's going to be something that he has to figure out eventually. I think over time he will. The greater problem is, what I just kind of pointed out is if your game plan doesn't have you getting the ball to DK Metcalf early and often in a game, I don't know what you're doing. And it's the first year, calling for Shane Waldron as their OC, and he doesn't have, Sean McVay looking over him or calling plays. He's the name title. That's part of it. Their offensive line play hasn't been great. That's part of it. And then I think you're starting to see like a real lack of confidence in Russell Wilson in how he's throwing. And again, that's to be expected when you don't have the same type of pop or zip. And like, you're so used as a quarterback to having like, almost like I can like not sound like completely corny here, but like Uncle Rico, like I can throw the ball wherever I want. Like, I'll put it over those mountains. Like,
irrational confidence.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to be to play quarterback in the NFL. I mean, literally, you are throwing a ball that's trying to be picked off by everyone in between to a spot before a guy gets there. And you get paid a lot to do that and to do it accurately and to do it well. And it takes a lot of confidence in your body to be able to do that over and over and over again. And you can just tell he doesn't have it. There's even times where he's almost kind of like hesitant, because now he realizes like that ball's not jumping off the same way. Like this past week, his stats actually looked a little better, but that's because of all those dink and checkdowns he had at the end
garbage
of the game.
Time. Not garbage time, but the final drive.
In the 2 minute drive, he probably hit DJ Dallas for at least three checkdowns, maybe four. I mean, everything was like short, and like just kind of, you know, getting down the field.
I mean, Geno Smith.
And then on the final throw, what was it, Freddie Swain, I believe?
Yep.
You know, he almost threatened to run. The Tampa 2 backer pulls up and then he throws it. But like, even Swain had to kind of come back for it. Like, and granted, that's one he's so wide open, you like almost get cute with. You don't want to miss, right? You don't want to airmail that one. But that's the problem is like, even that sort of throw, you can see like it doesn't have the same type of zip velocity and spin on it. So, again, he's going to have to adapt. It's a new normal. I think he might be doing it for another team next year.
I do too. And it, yeah, we talked about that. That's what we talked about really on the Monday Night Pod. It's sort of like, okay, what do you do here? Is it Pete? You know, does Russ go to ownership and say, me or Pete? And I mean, do you fire Pete Carroll? I mean, do you have the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to think of a David Tepper.
It always ends up being the player. I mean, I'm trying to think of a time. I mean, maybe Mike McCarthy in Green Bay. You know, maybe that was the only time I can think of a team where, you know, Mike ended up going and Aaron didn't. But, you know, I don't know.
The player loses those battles.
I'm trying to
think
of another example.
Yeah, the player loses those battles almost all the time. And additionally, I just think if you're Seattle, you have to be honest with yourself about your roster and look at it and say, we're just being buoyed by a healthy roster.
Tell me this much. How does Ken Norton get off the hook? I mean, that defense has been atrocious since he brought him back. And it's like, that's the other thing is, you know, they brought him back expecting to have the Legion of Boom 2.0, 3, whatever. And it never came to that. And I think he always flies under the radar. And like Pete kind of does from a defensive-minded guy. Like they never get any flack for it. It's always like Russell Wilson or what their offense isn't doing. It's like, wait a second. Like they were the most successful when they had their defense rolling. They haven't been able to get back to that.
They try to play like a team with a good run game and a good defense. Like, you have a bad offensive line, no good running backs, and no defense. Like, you can't play that way if you don't have that stuff.
It's like the same scheme that doesn't work anymore, but you keep running it because, you know.
Yeah. Okay, well, we were going to talk about the playoffs, but we got to get out of here. Do you think that – pick your two NFC wildcard teams as of today.
NFC wildcard teams.
I think we feel good. I'm feeling good about San Francisco. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, you should. I would say San Fran. It's hard to not say San Fran and LA. But man,
sorry. The two besides I guess it'd be three wild card teams now. I was already putting LA in. It may be a mistake at 7-4.
I'm confused. They're a wild card team right now.
Yeah. There's three wild card teams. I'm an idiot. Right. I said two. What I meant was the two. Who do you think the sixth and the seventh seed will be?
Oh, okay. San Francisco's one. I think Minnesota's the other one.
Okay.
I mean, look, how many games have they lost by one score?
Nine of their games have been one score. Yeah.
Has it been like basically like all of them?
I think they've been blown out in maybe one game.
Yeah. It's like, now granted, I don't know how they're going to overcome Dalvin Cook being out. He's a huge loss to that offense, but Kirk Cousins having a sneaky good year, like always. And you know, I look at that team and I'm like, there are a few things bouncing their way of turning this thing around. I don't have any faith in Taysom Hill taking over. I don't know why they don't get my guy Ian Book in there. Mm. You know, see what you got in him. Let him try to, you know, make this thing go and keep Taysom as what he is, as that kind of wildcat package. Atlanta's falling apart. That's another one I saw much faith in. So I think it's Minnesota and San Francisco.
I think I tend to agree with you. All right. The Brady Quinn Football Show, everybody. Brady Quinn, as always, my friend. Thanks. Good to talk to you. Good luck in your coaching search endeavors. Make sure to watch Brady on the big show or whatever, the big college football tailgate.
Big party. Noon kickoff. Yeah.
Big noon kickoff. Yeah. Oh, I don't have my out of network branding down.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.